So, for people that follow your podcast, they probably follow you on Twitter. We need the story on you and this kid named Bam going back and forth with some real brutal kid.
Okay. Great. I appreciate that question. Bam, he went to our high school. Not sure if you knew him. You were only there for our senior year, but Bam went to high school as he played football with us as well. So that's where we know him from.
Okay.
So there's a little level of familiarity there. We've played on PS4, the same 2K team and all that stuff. So a lot of that stuff started in the party, just talking shit to each other. And then it moved to the group chat, talking more shit to each other. And then it moved to openly on Twitter. And I'm like, yo, like, people can see this. And he's like, so? He's like, I already been suspended. I don't give a fuck. And I was like, well, I haven't. So, like, it gets a lot more vicious offline and in the private chats. But yeah, that's kind of something that's been like a daily thing. And I kind of look forward to it. I'm mad it hasn't happened yet today. I'm probably going to go start some shit with him later. It's a good venting session, because there's a lot of stress and stuff in daily life. You just got to get it out. And it's good to have
Is it really on site? Is it on site
Oh my gosh. For that day, it was most definitely on site. I real life dropped my
with
address and I told him pull up and he didn't, bitch. But
him?
anyways, whenever I see him, I'm definitely five pointing him. So it's whatever.
Yeah.
But that's a dog, it is what it is,
Sounds like it.
you gotta do that sometimes, man. It's all love.
Yeah, Bam.
Shit.
Yeah, Bam. Maybe once every month he tells me to kill myself or go fuck myself or something like that because I'm fucking with him about not getting pussy. So, So,
Look, man, Bam is a dis. I had to tell Bam to, and it really what it started was me telling Bam to open up more. Cause he was like taken. You know what I'm saying?
Good pause.
Then we be saying shit to him. And I was like, man, you gotta like fight back or something. He was like, fuck it, I'll fight back with you, pussy. And I was like, all right, bet I'm the one then. And that's kind of where that shit went from. So yeah, every day I kind of count on Bam to say some wild ass shit.
Wow, shit.
He got me. He said he didn't get me suspended, but one of those back and forths got me suspended for 12 hours because I said, nigga, die. So I was like, man, how did that get me? And then he got suspended. As soon as I got off my 12-hour suspension, he got suspended because he said fucking retard to me.
Yeah, he had to make a whole new account one time, right?
No, that was on his last account that he got permanently banned from. This one, I'm talking about this happened just like this week.
Oh, shit.
Well, I'm glad I brought that up. Everyone listening to the podcast, y'all got 13 days to go get Marcus a birthday present. Ain't that right?
Yep, sir. November 17th. You know where to send it. If you don't, hit me
You've
up.
Been
I'll tell
tweeting
you
that out every day, haven't you?
All pussy can be sent there too if you're sending that.
Yeah, that's good. That's enough.
For the last like 6 days, yes.
I got a shot. I got a drink for you when I get into town, man.
Yes, sir. Every year I do something annoying as fuck leading up to my birthday. Sometimes I straight up count down in my bio or on my screen name. Sometimes I'll just be like, yo, my birthday's coming up. And now I'm gonna ask what y'all get me every year, every
We
day.
throwing we throwing a COVID party or what are we doing?
I don't know, man. Details to be worked out because I'm working like there's what, 13 days left? I'm working
Do y'all
like
live right in Charlotte?
12 days leading up to it.
Yikes. Oh.
Welcome to episode 72 of the Pickup Podcast. It's your boy Marcus here, co-host Ant.
Hey.
Got a guest on today. We got brand new guy, Zach Wilson from the Playground, NBA podcast and writer for them. Happy to have him on. And old boy, Mr. Miami Heat himself, Mr. BOMB, Chris Denny, makes his return.
Yes, sir.
You know what we're going to do? Get into a little NBA talk, get into some NFL talk. You know what we're going to do today.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Straight off the rip, we had a couple new NBA coaching hires that happened since our last episode. We had Doc Rivers going over to the 76ers. We had Ty Lue getting picked up by the Clippers. I just wanted to open this up to, well, I'm going to start with Zach because he's the NBA expert here. Which coaching hire do you think is the better fit?
I mean, the Doc Rivers one's got to be pretty cool. I think between Doc and Embiid, you got to have like the top two worst voices for interviews. So that'll be tough to listen to for Philly fans. But I mean, I don't know. I think between the Morey Popeye Jones signing and the Jaeger signing, you have a lot of talent on every level in that kind of Philly, whatever management locker room, that organization. So it should be interesting to see what Doc does, because I think everyone likes to focus on the 3-1 leads that he's given up. But he won a championship in Boston. So he's coaching a talented roster for as odd of a fit as it is.
I know we've on previous episodes, we've discussed the 3-1 leads and stuff, and specifically that Boston run. I feel like he should have gotten more out of that Boston team. Giving up a 3-2 lead to the Heat that second year that the Heat went to the finals with LeBron. I didn't think that was really a good look for them. I thought that they blew the Lakers series, the second one, because they were up 3-2, I believe, in that series as well, and they lost both games in L.A. to lose that series, even though that was a GOAT Kobe moment, my dog. But I feel like that's a little bit on Doc, too. Not able to make coaching adjustments after Kendrick Perkins went down, and yeah. So
LeBron also tore them up in 2012
game six. That's when I was talking
game
about.
Six, yeah,
crazy. They were down 3-2. LeBron went nuts. But
yeah, that's that game where you always they always bring up and show like LeBron's face and shit all locked in and shit like that.
If
yeah.
there's ever a moment where you would say he turned the corner in the GOAT conversation, is probably there. That's probably where it all started to me for him becoming more, all right, he has a legit chance at gunning for that GOAT spot. It was starting right there.
Yeah.
Especially coming off of that previous finals he had the year before where he was, you know, kind of seen as a fourth quarter chump and not able to close and all that stuff. He did exactly all of that. So
yeah, for sure.
I just need Doc to, I'm not going to say prove himself, because like you said, he does have a ring, but kind of like solidify himself, because this is the third talented team that he's been on. I don't think Doc in the last 10 years or so has ever been on a talentless roster. When they gutted Boston, they shipped him out also. He wasn't a part of the whole rebuild process. The Clippers had several opportunities to advance to conference finals. And I think injuries kind of got the best of them a few years, but there were some years where they just flat out just got outplayed and coached. So I'm interested to see what the Clippers, on the flip side of that, what the Clippers do with Ty Lue. Because I think Ty Lue doesn't get enough credit for pulling that Cavs team together, because that was a team that I think a lot of people had expected to challenge the Warriors, but they didn't really do as good as expected, you know, in the first four games of the 2016 finals. Obviously, Steph was going nuts, and who else was going nuts? It was Steph and was it Harrison Barnes going nuts like the first four games of that series?
Yeah.
He made all the perfect adjustments. He started playing more pick and roll coverage on Steph. They actually let Klay shoot more, and they took Harrison Barnes completely out of the series. That shit was like ridiculous. His last three games, probably the worst turnaround I've ever seen in a final.
I was like, if you was ever a decent ball player, like you was like, I wish I could just be Harrison Barnes, dog. Open threes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like just, dog. And that's my UNC dog. But I mean, I was rooting against Golden State back then. So, but dog, he had it was probably the easiest job in the league, if you've been real. Like perfect. And he blew it. But yo, back to Doc's ashy voice. This is gonna be interesting because I'm curious like what Daryl Morey's gonna do more than anything.
Right.
I think
keeping him and Elton Brand together, and I don't know how that power dynamic's gonna work.
Oh, Morey's gonna be in charge, man.
Yeah.
For sure. He's definitely gonna be, and he doesn't seem like the guy that's gonna sit back and just wait for Elton Brand to figure it out. I feel for Elton Brand a little bit, even if he did go to Duke, because he really, from what I understand, he was going off of what the ownership wanted for a lot of these moves, and he just now felt like he was going to be able to make the moves he wanted to make, and then they hired Daryl Morey. which means all that goes away. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, it is a good guy to learn under, but I don't think he's going to have much power now.
So you don't think it's going to be like too many chefs in the kitchen?
I think there's one chef and there's a guy that he's telling to get to chop up the vegetables and shit like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
While I do all this other more important shit. Yeah.
All right, word. Chris, you got any insight on these two coaching hires?
You know, I was looking into the Ty Lue to the Clippers one, and I find it, you know, at a coaching decision standpoint, I think that he's better at in-game adjustments than Doc was, but he's coming into a situation where you don't know what you're going to do with Paul George right now.
Right.
There's always already been turmoil about Kawhi not being a leader, so you don't have a leader in that locker room, and you just sat on the bench for a year as assistant coach, and you saw it all firsthand. So, I mean, for him, he might have the best grasp on everything going on, and there's probably going to be high expectations as always because it's the Clippers. But I don't see anything in his favor, you know, moving forward. Obviously, over there, it's championship or nothing, and they're not close right now, in my opinion. So, I mean, I think he's in a lose-lose situation. As far as Doc going over to Philly, I think y'all hit it on the head with too many players in the kitchen, really. I think that it's always been like that. I remember listening on the radio one time on a long car ride. They were just saying that the Philadelphia 76ers organization is right there at the top with the Knicks when it comes to making decisions. So, I mean, with Doc, good luck. If you're in Philadelphia, y'all know how I love the Birds and everything in Philadelphia. Good luck over there as well. I think both of them are not in situations where it's going to be championship or nothing for the next 2-3 years, and I don't think either of them get close.
Well, especially Ty Lue. Zach, I had a question for you. Well, actually, both of y'all. If you were the GM or president over there in Philly, who you keeping, Embiid or Simmons?
I mean, I've been asked this question probably
a million times.
I think like every pod I've been on in the past 2 weeks, I've been asked this question, and I always come back with the same thing of like, realistically, I'm keeping both. I think they can coexist. It's more about who you put around them, because we've seen it last year. They probably put up the best fight against the Raptors out of anyone that playoff run. 2 years ago, they had the best rated starting lineup in the league when it was Simmons, Redick, Covington, Saric, and Embiid. And, you know, you're not even surrounding those guys with anything super special. It's just shooting at that point. And to have the best starting lineup in the league, especially when the Warriors were out there with Steph, KD, Clay, and obviously that's a better lineup, but we're talking statistical, from a statistical standpoint, Philly did have it. So, I would keep both, but if you're putting a gun to my head and I had to trade one, I'm trading Simmons.
Thank you.
Yep. So
you're getting some.
Okay. So you keeping both, are you putting Simmons, the ball in Simmons' hands? Or are you saying, yo, you're a four now, we're going to go get like a playmaker to be our point guard? What do you do with both of them? And I know like it's not the same because, you know, they have Horford now and Tobias Harris. Were those like big mistakes, you think? Because that did make that team kind of completely different.
Oh, no, yeah. For my first move, if I'm Daryl Morey, is getting one of those two out of there, one of Horford or Harris, if not, maybe both. And then, yeah, I think everyone talks about them needing shooting, and I just mentioned it like 2 minutes ago. But I think more importantly, honestly, is probably a pick-and-roll ball handler that can run pick-and-roll with Embiid, even run some with Simmons as a screener. But and I think the reason I said I would trade Simmons if I had to pick one is because – if you're keeping Simmons, putting the ball in his hands isn't really the best use of his talents, especially when you don't have a ton of shooting. And if you're just using him as like a screen and roll man, a screen and dive man, you might as well just keep Embiid and use him because he's more lethal as a roller. So I don't know. Do you put Simmons in the short corner and let him get dump off passes? It's probably the most effective use of him in the half court. But I think you probably shift to what New Orleans did with Lonzo, where on the fast break, Simmons is the primary ball handler. He can grab it off the rim, go himself, or you can outlet to him. And then the half court, he probably is a little more off ball, and you have to get a point guard and maybe give Shake Milton a little more love too.
Yeah.
I would contend that Embiid is
a more lethal threat for the pick and pop or a trail three than Simmons is also.
Oh, for sure.
So, and that's all. Yeah. I would move Horford first because, especially for the contract that he's carrying with him right now, I don't think that there's anything that he brings to the table that Embiid can't do. And so I feel like if there was an ideal situation to go get a pick and roll ball handler, which is kind of crazy because I actually really liked when they had Markelle Fultz.
You know what they said about Tobias Harris? They was like, hey, if you need 18, he'll get you 18. If you need 30, he'll get you 18. You know, so I know for one, they picked the wrong guy, and then they let JJ go.
Yep.
And pretty much downhill from there, because I think that they were like kind of almost there, and then it just took like a big ass step back. So I hope they get together, because I do like Simmons, and well, when he is aggressive, I do like him. He's not like, you know, standing basically on the bench during the fourth quarter of a playoff game. When he's not doing that, I like him. You know, but at some point we got to get rid of the P word potential and just go off of what he's actually showed us. So
I mean, what he showed us is 15 feet and in. Like, he is elite.
Like, yeah. 6 feet and in.
He is elite with the ball in his hands, without the ball in his hands, 15 feet and in. He is, I would say, in the East, a top five player.
Hey, Zach. So, and Chris, one episode we were talking about, like, hypothetically, if Simmons got traded away or whatever, he had his own team, that maybe that would unlock another level of play for him. Like, kind of, I know it's a little different than like when James Harden was in OKC. I know at least me, when he went to Houston, I was like, man, he giving this shit up to have his own team. I don't see it. And then, you know, he scores like 50 points for like five games or some shit like that. And we were like, well, maybe that would happen for Simmons. Maybe he would turn into almost like this Giannis type dude. Do y'all think that's a possibility if like that ever were to happen, or they were to trade and beat away or something like that?
With Simmons, I don't think so. I think Simmons is just so, like Marcus just said, right? So good within 15, that's his game. You're not going to see 40, 50 point games all the time from him unless he expands his game out a little further. I think defenses prepare for it. I mean, they want to give up these explosive dunks here and there, fine, but he's a 25, 26 points per game kind of guy no matter who's on that court, because he likes facilitating the ball so much too. So I don't think you put him in any situation where he's that dude. Definitely not Harden like or anything like that.
Yeah. He honestly just has to be willing to shoot the ball. I mean, even if he doesn't make it, as long as he's shooting and keeping the defense honest, because if we're being honest, like, his form isn't that bad. Like, he's not looking like Lonzo. He's not looking like Sean Marion. It's nothing beautiful, but I'm sure, like, if he shoots the ball, he's going to shoot it at, what, like a 30% clip, 28% clip, which still is not good at all. But it's better than the defense knowing that you're not even going to try, so they can sag like 10 feet off of you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dude, even if he just gets like a mid range,
that's it.
Like,
that's all he needs, because then he can play out of the short role too.
Yeah. Hey man, like I want
him to be good so badly. I liked him when he was at LSU. He had this one game, like 15 assists and 20 rebounds. I was like, this shit is ridiculous. Like, and I think they won that game.
I watched him at LSU for sure, and he wasn't playing point. I mean, they weren't very good, but he was still efficient as fuck. And still doing other stuff to affect the game. It's just that they were just that trash that they didn't even make the tournament, you know?
I mean, I hope he stays where he is for my sake, because I bet so much. So every game they play, he's got plus 1,200 or more odds to make 1-3, and I take it every night. So
I keep that. Yeah, that's the betting guru over there. If anyone needs advice, hit Chris up, because that man be on it.
Yes, sir. We've been on a tear.
But there's another coaching situation I wanted to ask y'all about. So up in Brooklyn, Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire joined up there. What are you guys' expectations for them with a supposedly healthy Kyrie and a healthy Kevin Durant coming back for 2020-21?
I mean, they signed Mike D'Antoni too. So I guess like, Kyrie really was right when he said anyone could be the head coach on any given night, because they got Mike D'Antoni, Steve Nash. I guess Kyrie and KD can run the show. And I think when you pair D'Antoni and Nash and Stoudemire, I think you know what you're getting. You're probably going to get some sort of rendition of, you know, very fast ball, those 7 seconds or less Suns. And I think Kyrie and KD fit that really well. Dinwiddie fits that role really well. Jared Allen's like the perfect center. He could play an Amari Stoudemire type role. Obviously, I'm not saying to that extent, that level, but just as far as the guy who's just going to run to the net and dunk everything. But I mean, it depends how much they want to keep playing DeAndre Jordan over him to keep KD and Kyrie happy.
Yeah, I think to add to that, I mean, back in 2005 is what I saw. They were, I mean, I know the points were a lot lower back then, but they were first in the league with 108 points a game on that Suns team. And they were first in pace, and they were, I think, third to last in defense of points allowed and efficiency. I think that's exactly what you're going to see. What, for that to work again, yeah, you got to have the pieces for that puzzle, like he was just mentioning, right? But I think you do have those athletes. I mean, Dinwiddie's an athlete. LeVert's an athlete. Joe Harris is your spot-up guy if you need one on these breaks. And then, obviously, you got Kyrie, and you got KD and Allen, right? So I think you're going to see as close as you can get to that 05 Suns team, and bringing in, you know, Nash, whatever. He's a good picture, right, for them. But you got D'Antoni's really going to be implementing the offense there. So I think that's the goal. I think everyone knows what the goal is going to be, and I think they have the pieces in that puzzle to make it work.
I'm interested to see player development from Nash and Stoudemire. Because, I mean, we kind of don't, like you said, we kind of know it's going to be more so D'Antoni's show as far as, like, implementing the offense and the system. That's what we're expecting, at least. But sometimes, you know, just having a different voice in the locker room can, you know, different insights from players that have previously played can bring out some different things in players. So I'm interested to see that. I think, especially with Kyrie, because Kyrie's been one of those borderline, I'm not saying he hasn't been elite, but I don't think he's ever been like the best point guard in the league. He's been kind of borderline, sitting behind the like Chris Paul, Steph, you know what I'm saying? You know, those guys up there, like right behind them. And I feel like with insight from someone like Steve Nash, different way of running the offense, different offense that he is running, all health, you know, being wished on everybody, nothing happens again. I think that Kyrie could be the one to make that next step. I think this is Kyrie's team.
You say you think it's Kyrie's team?
I think this will be Kyrie's team. Yeah. I think KD is there, and I think KD is a leader, but I feel like, you know, Kyrie, he said he's wanted to be the guy. It's why he left Boston, because he was tired of niggas calling Bron his daddy.
I was Cleveland, you mean?
Cleveland. Yeah. In Cleveland. And in Boston, you know, the young guys were kind of showing him up because they just frankly were playing better than him.
And because he was trying to lead through the media, too.
That, too. And it's hard to lead from the sideline when you're hurt.
That's the same reason KD left Golden State, too, because he was tired of not getting the respect he deserved, of being recognized as the best player, the leader. So hopefully those two don't kind of duke it out amongst each other, because this thing could go south quick.
I feel like since they're there for the same, for what we perceive to be the same reasons, I don't feel that to be an issue. You know what I'm saying? Especially since it was a mutual, does it like they decided, hey, we're going to do this over here in Brooklyn, you know?
That coaching staff is a nice mixture of like newbies and very seasoned guys, because you got Jock Vaughn, you got this guy,
Udoka.
Udoka. Yeah, Udoka, I guess from San Antonio, and I guess he was there before. So that should be interesting. I think they're protecting Steve Nash in the right way, like, you know, as far as he's getting the guys he wants, but also getting the guys he needs, you know what I'm saying, just to make sure it's smooth. So be interesting to see. I'm waiting for the juicy stuff, because I think Kyrie and Kevin, no matter how cool they are, they're going to get on each other's nerves at some point. So, especially, I think it's going to be Kyrie and on KD's nerves, to be honest.
Can I ask, have we ever seen a division with a head coaching group as interesting or talented as the Atlantic this year? Like, we got Nurse, Brad Stevens, Doc Rivers, Steve Nash, and Tom Thibodeau. Like, that's a really – that's a crazy group.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
How many teams out that division made the playoffs?
Four. Everyone but the Knicks. Yeah. And they're probably all going to be, like, top five, too. It's or top six. It's going to be those four and then Milwaukee and Miami.
Right.
Hey, what do y'all think about Rondo to the Clippers?
Rondo to the Clippers? I don't think he's the answer. They need someone like Rondo. I don't know if Rondo is that guy to do it 82 games. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't either. I heard someone, like, recommend that on the pod. It sounds good for the playoffs. Like, if you was just, like, a one-off in the playoffs, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I don't – I think – well – and the thing about the Clippers is their issues have all been chemistry, right? It's never been talent. And now then again, that's also what Ty Lue is kind of given praise for, is not being afraid to shake things up and get in guys' face and tell them how it is. But I think the reason he gets so underrated is because every time the camera pans to him, he has that face that you make when you, like, realize you forgot your cleats and your parents are driving and you got to tell them. Like, he just always has that face every time the camera pans to him. But I don't know. He seemed like a good culture setter in Cleveland, so we'll see what he can do here because they need a vocal leader.
So they talking about 22nd of December restart.
Yeah.
And the pushback has been the players won MLK Day restart.
That was actually the next topic, actually.
Okay. So what do y'all think is realistic and what's going to happen? Because – I don't think that 22nd December restart is realistic.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that second proposed one, that January 18th one. I think that makes the most sense. But then again, I mean, who knows, right? I mean, I think everything is obviously based on COVID. They're going to play it as smart and as cautious as possible because they know if they jump the gun, it's going to be an absolute disaster again, and it's going to get pushed to February and then March. So I think – bare minimum, it's January 18th.
Yeah, just an hour ago, Lo and Woj reported how the player representatives for each team are expected to approve the December 22nd start, and a formal vote will be taken Thursday. So it's kind of looking like December 22nd will be what it is. Because I think really what it came down to is these players realized they were going to lose money, and then they realized if they start in January, they're going to lose even more. So I think that's ultimately what will sway their decision to starting early.
Yeah, they had said
like the escrow or something like that.
Yeah, they were talking about if they start MLK, they was going to cut it to like 50 games or something like that, which is a substantial amount of, you know, money. And then it'll be less game revenue because they want to open up those stadiums and shit.
Yeah, they cannot afford to keep running a bubble type environment. Obviously, it was made headlines at the end of this season how the NBA lost like $1 billion of revenue, or they fell like $1 billion short of their projected revenue from the beginning of the season before COVID, you know, was a factor or anything. And a lot of it had to do with operating the bubble for what was like 12 weeks or so, 13 weeks.
Like that, yeah.
What's the plan? Is the plan if they start on this December 22nd, is it, you know, everyone back in their stadium?
Except for Toronto.
Yeah, I think that's what it is with no fans up until, like, you know, until, like, the situation outside changes, basically. I think that's what the plan is.
I would imagine it'd be similar to what the NFL did, which was no fans, and then if everything seems cool for a little bit, they'll start limited, you know, fans, like, 5% capacity, 10% capacity or whatever. It's much smaller arenas than in football. And obviously these are all indoors. So that's a factor too. Like spread and stuff.
I will say the reason, another big reason they're starting early for the money is because TNT every year has ring night and then ABC has Christmas. So they won't get near as much money off ABC if they don't play Christmas. And then having ring night before that on TNT, and then that becomes a whole big mess. So I think that's why they wanted to start before Christmas and not even just on Christmas.
Yeah, then they were talking about making sure the season ended in time before the Olympics so they weren't competing with the Olympics. So I get, like, why everyone, like, I get the motivation from the league and from the players. Like, do y'all excuse me? Do y'all think that some of the teams that were deep in the playoffs, like, do you think it'll be a lot of load management this year because of that?
I think it'll be irresponsible for there not to be load management, more load management.
I'm mad that we're using that term. That's my fault. Bringing this on.
I think there'll be just as much as there's always been, really. But, yeah. Because really, if you look at the teams that went deep, they're all young except for the Lakers. Like, Boston's young, Miami's young, Denver's young. It's mainly just LeBron, because even the majority of the Lakers, as far as the rotation players, when it comes to AD and Caruso, and then who knows if they're even going to keep anyone else, are young too.
Right.
I think I forget what podcast I was listening to, and they were talking about, like, the normal amount of days from the last day of the finals to, like, opening day or some shit like that. And a lot of the teams, even that were in the bubble, by the time they start the season, they will have, like, a regular full off season. So for most of the teams, it's, you know, it's a lot of those teams, like, you know, the teams that didn't go in the bubble, they haven't played since March, so they're ready. Someone suggested staggering the beginning, which was – it sounded like a good idea.
It sounds good until the end of the season.
Until like, the marquee, you know, matchup to start the season is, like, the Wizards versus, like, whoever. Whoever is left. That was – no, actually, the Wizards, they went to the bubble.
They were, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
They were kind of there.
You get the point.
They went there and lost spots.
So – it'd be interesting to see what happens, man. Like, I think it's still some negotiating needs. And I'm just curious, is it going to be like the NFL where just throughout the season, we're just going to have people testing positive and then it's just going to be like, just going to sit out and then come back or what? Like, I'm curious to see how that's going to go because people are going to test positive.
I think there's a lot less panic about it now than there was back in March, April when this first came out, because when it first, there was almost no real information on it. So it was like, oh, get it, you're going to die.
I'm going to be real. I think there should be, because if you notice, a lot of the football players that test positive and come back, they don't play the same. And, like, I know Kendrick Nunn isn't, like, the greatest example, but he never played the same either. And Westbrook was playing good before, and then he never played the same. So I think there's a lot of, like, short and long-term effects that people are not thinking about because they're kind of just looking at, Are you dying or are you, you know, recovering, but not really the actual effects? Because there's a lot of stuff just throughout the world that they're discovering where some people are just not able to, like, think properly and function properly even after recovering. So I think we're going to see a lot of that if they just open this shit up and just treat it like
how football. But it's also, I think it's also, like, is it the fact that they're recovering from it, or is it that they have to sit at home for a week and then boom, you're in a game? Because I mean, we looked at Rudy Gobert, he obviously had it at the beginning and he was great in the bubble.
Yeah, but it's like 4 months later.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Because I mean, who knows if it's that they need to recover from it because COVID's causing problems, or maybe it's just they're sitting out for a week and a half, then they're thrown in a game after not even practicing.
Oh, so you're saying that they should spend more time recovering
and practicing? I'm on the side of, like, who knows if the reason that they're not playing well after getting COVID is because maybe it is the side effects, or it's just that they were sitting at home and then they had to jump back in.
Yeah, like Montrezl Harrell, basically, who never really got it, you know, his shit together because he was out of shape because it wasn't really his fault.
I don't know.
That dude lost some money.
Everything's so fine-tuned at that level. Anything can really throw you off. And that kind of leads me to the next topic. So one of the people that is struggling after a COVID case is Cam Newton, switching to football real quick. Cam Newton has lost his last three starts, or the Patriots have lost their last four games. Cam Newton's lost his last three. What's wrong with Cam Newton? Do we feel like COVID is the reason?
Well, I think they just are trash. They had a trash roster. Their defense was great.
But you look at Cam individually, he has not played well. He has missed reads. He has made correct reads, missed throws. He has made all right throws that have been, you know, tipped and intercepted or whatever, because his receivers are who they are. And then he's also had plays where he's like, he had open field and didn't run. He had open field and ran when there was a receiver open. It just looked like, I kind of go back to what you were just saying for a second. Is that a side effect of he's just not able to, like, mentally process things right now? Because I've seen that as, you know, maybe some cognitive functions can get hazy as an effect of COVID. Mm-hmm. Is it their play calling too safe for him? I think that's part of the issue too. Josh McDaniels is fucking stinking it up on a week-to-week basis against weak defenses, and that kind of pisses me off too as a Cam fan.
I think it's all of it, man.
Yeah, I think you call it how it is, and that's the Patriots suck top to bottom. Cam Newton looks absolutely terrible. I mean, he's not anywhere near – and I wanted Cam Newton to do well. I can't stand the Patriots, but I wanted Cam Newton, you know, the whole picture of him going to the Patriots and being the next, you know, second coming, right, of Brady in New England. You watch his games and you watch the Patriots as a whole, they just suck. I mean, every bit of it. The O-line's terrible. I get it. There's injuries there. He doesn't recognize when blitz packages like he used to. He's not picking up coverages. And I mean, even the fumble at the end of the game, that's not the Cam Newton everyone expected. It's just, I just don't think he's good. He's not playing well. I mean, maybe his better days are behind him, like people were saying, which I wish wasn't true. I think the whole team, top to bottom, is just terrible.
Yeah, I think is all right. So I do think it's COVID, because he was playing good before it, but I still think their roster was trash. And then they had like some, probably like the most op outs on defense. And regardless, his defense definitely affects your offense and how you function and stuff, and pressure you got on you if you know you got a trash defense compared to having like probably the best defense last year. So I think all that stuff is what matters. And yeah, it might be the COVID affecting him, but at the end of the day, even if it wasn't, they don't.
Yeah, can we get Cam like a good receiving corps for once? Like, it's like the Patriots for a long time, for Brady's whole run, obviously they weren't always fantastic, but he threw to some very good guys. And then you go back to Carolina these past few years, his best receiver was like Ted Ginn. And then as soon as he leaves, they probably have the best receiving corps they've had since they drafted him. With like Robbie and DJ Curtis.
Yep.
And then you got McCaffrey and this Davis guy who's just running for his absolute life. Like, this guy's a baller, which I think will help McCaffrey too, so he doesn't have to touch the ball like 65 times a game. But yeah, no, I don't know. Cam just can't get a good receiving
corps. Word.
So, Zach, I have to ask, who's your
– I'm actually a Carolina fan, so I'm a big Cam guy.
I'm so sorry.
I started liking them back in the he's blanking my name. D'Angelo Williams. I started liking him back in those days.
I thought you were gonna say Jake DeLone.
So, essentially right around when they got Cam. That's when I really started to become a fan. And I didn't really have a team before that.
Nice. Glad to have. I'm so sorry that you chose poorly, but glad to have you. Me and Ann are also Carolina followers. Yeah, Ann's a little more distant, right?
Yeah, I'm on the hiatus this year. I want to see.
Well, so I'm up in Canada too, so I could have chosen anyone. Yeah.
Oh, you live in Canada.
Oh, shit.
That's oh, wow. It. Shout out from the North, yeah, man.
We're bringing this podcast international.
No, I'm just kidding. We're
Drake actually went out today. He got knee surgery, so we're hoping for a speedy recovery.
So this is the part of the episode where we're just going to let everyone vent about their teams right now. So we got an Eagles fan on here, Chris. What do you want to say about your team, man?
You know, I think the defense looks great. I think when Miles Sanders gets back, that's going to help.
Yes.
I think the young receiving core Fulgham's came out of nowhere. Love the kid. Greg Ward, he's solid, even though you remember him quarterback at Houston.
Yes, sir.
You got him right. I think the pieces are there. Goddard's back. And we all know the problem, and it's Carson Wentz. I go through – I don't know if you follow me. Yeah,
he said it. He said it. Where's Reggie at when you need him?
Every fucking game, I'm on Twitter, and I look back the next morning, and I have 15 tweets that say bench Carson Wentz, and then in the fourth quarter, I delete my tweets. So he's just not consistent. I love Carson Wentz. I'm trying to, like, I don't think Jalen Hurts would do that much better, to be honest. I think fake Eagles fans would say that. But, you know, I also have them, when we get to that point, as my dark horse team in the second half, because the pieces are there. It's all on Carson Wentz to play better. I think they have a tough schedule coming up, but if he plays well, the Eagles win games, and that's it. So that's where I'm at.
I mean, you're in the worst division maybe ever.
Ever.
In NFL history. Yeah. You might have a six-win team win the division.
You literally will.
Like, no cap. And yeah. I think it might be y'all.
Oh yeah, I think we win the division, and
6-9-1.
I think we win with 6 or 7 wins, like you said, because I mean the Cowboys are done. The Washington football team is abysmal, and the Giants are the Giants. So I mean, I think we win the division, but I think there's potential for the Eagles to actually be a decent team if Carson Wentz can play well.
Yeah, man, I can't have a 4-turnover game, even though y'all won the game, which blew my freaking mind, and covered.
And covered.
That was, I mean, so like I said, the talent that you guys are playing right now is just historically bad. I think that you might have 3 teams finish with less than 5 wins. Like, obviously, if I think 6 teams are going to win the division, I think there's going to be 3 teams with less than 5, and I think that might be a record.
Right.
I don't know if that's ever happened.
And, you know, coming up, yeah, we got the Giants, so hopefully we get a win there. But then we have Seattle, New Orleans, Cleveland, Green Bay, and Arizona. That's not fun for them. So, I mean, it's going to be tough. Like you said, 6 wins is probably in the future. But, I mean, they can squeeze 2 out of those. I mean, they're an 8-win team, and they look decent beating some over 500 teams.
Yeah. All right, Zach, you have any words for
the Carolina Panthers? Yeah, so as we talked before this, like, I'm – fully NBA first, so I'm more just like a fan. So you guys are probably a lot more in depth of knowledge on football and the Panthers than me. But to me, I feel like the only thing I have to complain about, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, is that we're going to be just good enough to stay out of those top 3 quarterbacks in the draft next year, but we're not going to be good enough to actually compete. Like, that was the reason I was so mad that we signed Teddy. It's not because I thought he was horrible, but it was because I was like, great, we're going to be just relevant enough to stay out of Lawrence and Fields and Lance, but we're not going to be good enough to, you know, make the playoffs or the Bucks or the Saints. So that's my personal rant. I don't know if you guys have anything to disagree with or add.
No, you were preaching my gospel that I've been saying since March. Exactly what I said in March. Not only the fact that Teddy was good enough talent-wise and with the offense that we have as far as our receiving core and Christian McCaffrey, and we actually have a semi-decent offensive line when everyone's healthy, but that's the issue right now. And Joe Brady, of course, he's been on and off, but more on than off this year as a play caller. We're just good enough to, like, win 6 games and look – okay, and give some people some hope. Like those games where Teddy's throwing 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, yeah, everyone's like, see, look, why the fuck would you need Cam? Blah, blah, blah. And then now you got a game where Teddy throws for 170 yards and 2 picks, and it's like, all right, well, this is what's going to keep us back for the next 3 years or the two years after this year on his deal, because I don't think they're going to let him go early. $60 million. I mean, they have a 2-year out, 2-year $40 million, but – I don't see them taking that unless they for sure have a QB in the wait.
Yeah, I don't want to say I got happy when McCaffrey got hurt, because that sounds horrible, but I was like a little bit like, oh, maybe we'll falter now. But then Mike Davis just came in and started balling. Like, this guy is playing really well.
South Carolina's own, man. South Carolina Gamecock. I remember Mike Davis when he played up there. I went to Clemson. Yeah, he's a baller. He's making the most of his opportunity. I think he's 100% earned his right to stay on the field when McCaffrey comes back. He's going to have a role where I think he's going to touch the ball at least 10 times a game, which is amazing considering that I think all season it was like 17 touches by other running backs or something like that last year. I have to fact check myself on that.
Okay.
But
sorry to cut you off. Last I was going to say, I have a take about like McCaffrey and him. And I want to get your guys' take on it. So I guess it's not more so a take, just like an opinion I have. So I think when McCaffrey comes back, we should, I don't want to say like evenly split, like obviously McCaffrey will still get the majority of the touches, but I think really you should split the running back duties between McCaffrey and Davis and even Samuel, like let all three of them run, put McCaffrey in the slot a little bit more, stop like letting them run into those D linemen and linebackers play after play after play, because McCaffrey's still an absolute threat in the slot. And then honestly, you could even run like them in the backfield together. I know Joe Brady's pretty creative and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what you guys think about that.
No.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I'm not even a Panthers fan, but I got McCaffrey sitting on my bench for the past 7 weeks. And he needs 30 touches. He needs 10 catches. That's it. I love Mike Davis. I'm a South Carolina graduate, but I mean, I'm not going to put my two cents in here too much for you Carolina fans, but I need McCaffrey to touch the ball as much as possible.
Yeah, I agree. And you can actually, like, you can stretch out his career, McCaffrey's career that way. He could actually slim down because I know he bulked up the first few years. It actually surprised me running in between. Inside, because I thought he was just more of a breakaway runner and, you know, could catch the ball off the backfield and stuff like that, but he's surprising me. So he can even, like, if you use him that way, you can even let him slim down a little bit and get back to where he was, and he'd probably be even more of a elusive runner. So I think that's a good idea, and I'm with y'all. Like, that's why I'm kind of reserving my right to be their fan, to be a fan of the team after this year, because I just want to see where they're going. Because I feel like the front office over the years has kind of let at least me down. They never were aggressive in trying to get anybody, bring anybody in, wide receiver-wise, or just really anytime there was those, like, great deals on players, like even guys like Josh Gordon, they never, like, would take a chance on any of those kind of guys. And so I'm kind of tired of that. And then I didn't understand the Teddy move. And I like him as well. But I just kind of want to see where they're going with this. Are they going to do a complete rebuild? Because I don't think they have to. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Really. I think if they can get a few guys in, next year they could, like, legit, you know, go back to the playoffs. So
I love Jeremy Chinn, by the way.
Yes, sir.
He's my favorite player on the defense.
Jeremy Chinn is a dog. Jeremy Chinn and Brian Burns are everything this defense needs. The rest of the nine.
Hey, Derrick Brown.
Maybe
bad.
Dante
like
Jackson. Like, strong.
You don't like Derrick Brown?
Huh?
Yes. Yeah, moment.
I was an advocate for him on draft night. Well, I wasn't really an advocate for him. I just more foresaw that we were going to take him just because of how the roster was set up. Everyone's like, no, we're going to take Isaiah Simmons. And I was like, well, I'm looking at the roster as it's built right now on draft night. We have one healthy defensive tackle, and it was Woodrow Hamilton. Quan Short was still hurt, so he wasn't even activated yet. So I was like, we're going to take a defensive tackle, and it's going to be Derrick Brown. So from that perspective, I understood it. But – and I'm glad, like I said, that we got Chinn, because I don't feel like we missed anything on missing Simmons, because I think he's everything that Isaiah Simmons was going to be in our defense, and probably a little more because he is a little more fluid and – he's able to drop back into that safety role, and I think he plays the safety role probably a little better. I think Simmons is more linebacker than safety, and Chinn for safety than linebacker, but he's good enough to fill in that.
I was always hoping for one of those offensive tackles, because we really never get one of those anytime. But
look, I said that too, and I got destroyed by Panthers Twitter. It was like, you not see we had the second worst run defense? And I was like, all right. I'm thinking because at the time we still had a Cam on the roster, so I'm thinking, all right, so do you or
well, it's also like
do you
we
not
got holes everywhere.
Like,
you got to fill one.
You got to start somewhere, and especially when you have the same holes popping up every single year, you got to eventually, like, no, the roster is not just going to fix itself. You can't just third round, fourth round draft guys and practice squad build them up. It happens every once in a while. You know, we had Andrew Norwell on that Super Bowl team. I believe he was undrafted, and he came up and became a big time player, got that big ass contract in Jacksonville. But I just don't believe there are certain positions. Left tackle is one that you just have to go. You have to go get the best. You can't just prey on development and hope that someone turns out. It's too important. Quarterback, defensive end, and left tackles. I feel like you just got to get the best. But so moving on to, we're in the halfway point of the season for most teams have played 8 games. Some have played 7, you know, bye week or whatever, or they've missed COVID or whatever. So we're going to do some mid-season awards. I don't know if everyone – I sent the list out to everyone beforehand, so I hope you had a chance to think about it. I'll start it off. So for me, I got my MVP of the season so far is Russell Wilson. I don't think that there's a quarterbacking better than him given his situation. He's got probably the worst defense in the league. I think statistically, I know after 7 weeks, it was the second worst in points allowed. And he's quarterbacking them. Every year they ask Russell Wilson to be QB Jesus, and he does it. And this year he's doing it as good as he's ever done it. Offensive player of the year will also go to Russell Wilson. I don't believe that one is without the other. I think that's kind of stupid to me. Defensive year, I got Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett is – a lot of people are, you know, focused on the Baker Mayfield aspect of Cleveland, but what Myles Garrett is doing on defense, he's on a freaking tear, and he's a huge reason why they're having their best season in the last 20 years. Offensive rookie of the year, I got to go with Justin Herbert. Herbert obviously didn't start the first few games until they tried to kill Tyrod Taylor. Glad he made it through, but Herbert's been on fire. I don't think that anyone should have any more doubts about him. He was heavily questioned coming into the draft for reasons that I know not. I was a big supporter of him coming out of Oregon. I thought he was going to come out in 2019 draft. He went back to school for another year, and I didn't see any particular fall off that would warrant a lot of the criticism that he got. I saw a lot of coaching issues, but it's a different story. And defensive rookie of the year, I'm going to be a homer, and I'm going to say Jeremy Chinn. Just recently won defensive rookie of the month. I feel like he's, especially as far as the surprise factor, not a lot of people were expecting him. He was, some people considered a reach, the last pick of the second round. We traded up for him. But he's filled in his role, starting at linebacker, dropping into some nickel coverage, dropping into safety. He's just been doing it all, getting picks, getting tackles for loss. And I don't think that anyone necessarily expected that of him. And for that, I would say for exceeding expectations on a fantastic level, Jeremy Chinn is my defensive rookie of the year. And then coach of the year, I got to go with Pete Carroll. Just because, no. So I was going back and forth between Pete Carroll and Mike Tomlin. Because Mike Tomlin's still undefeated, but they played a horrible record or a horrible slate of teams. But Pete Carroll has put together a roster that I feel like shouldn't be this good, but they are, especially offensively, like DK Metcalf. Like, a lot of people slept on DK Metcalf because of his route running ability, mine included, letting Tyler Lockett run all over the field, Chris Carson believing in him as your running back because they had, like, 5 in that rotation at one point, like, last year. And, I mean, they had some injury issues with that too, but finally getting the offensive rotation down to let Russell Wilson be as successful as he is. I think a lot of that goes back to Pete Carroll assembling that team. And the only thing he's missing to me is an offensive line, a consistent offensive line. But even then, you know, they got, like, Dwayne Brown has been a little better than previous years. They're giving Russell Wilson a little more to work with. Just got to do something about that defense. But they're really young, and they make plays when they have to. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good list. Mine's pretty similar. So for MVP and Offensive Player of the Year, I got Russell Wilson as well. I don't think he needs too much more explanation than what you put in there. I mean, he's clearly the best quarterback right now in the NFL and on probably one of the most high-powering offenses in the NFL. So definitely him for those two. For Rookie of the Year, I agree as well with Herbert. I mean, I know Burrow is going to get a lot because that team is terrible, but, I mean, God, that Chargers team isn't much better. And he's got 400 less yards in 2 less games and 3 or 4 more touchdowns already.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a gunslinger out there, just like he did in college. So, I mean, I think he wins that for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Let's see. For Defensive Player of the Year, I got Aaron Donald right now. I think Myles Garrett's a good pick, but Aaron Donald getting the same amount of sacks at 9 coming out of the defensive tackle position with, I mean, getting double teamed day in and day out.
Right.
It's just extremely impressive for him. Defensive rookie of the year, I have Antoine Winfield Jr. Now, I heard a bunch of hype about him, and I didn't get to watch a legitimate Bucks game until recently, and they line him up everywhere.
Yep.
I haven't seen Jeremy Chinn play too much either, so I can't say that, you know, he's playing better than Jeremy Chinn, but this kid, he lines up in strong safety, free safety, corner, and then sometimes they even put him right there on the line for a free rush there. So, I mean, he's a stud, and obviously he's the son of Antoine Winfield, so he comes from a pretty good background there. And then, let's see, I think the only other one that your comeback player of the year, I think it's got to be Big Ben. I mean, yeah, sure, he may not be putting up the craziest statistics, but when you have a team, you're leading a team that's undefeated, I mean, off season-ending injury last year. I don't know anyone else that can really compete too much for that one. I mean, if you guys can find one, let me know. But
I want it to be Cam. My list. That's why I didn't give mine, because I want it to be Cam. I don't want to be no one else.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, but no,
I think
but it's probably Ben.
It won't.
I mean, mine are all very similar. Like Russ for MVP and Offensive Player of the Year. You guys have spoken enough about how he's just a man on a mission. And I always said he was easily the second best quarterback in the league. Maybe, I don't know. I still wouldn't put him above Mahomes, I don't think. But he's like right up there. He's closer to Mahomes than whoever is third to him. But I do want to give some love to Derrick Henry, because I feel like quarterbacks are the only ones who get love for Offensive Player of the Year. But Defensive Player of the Year, I went with Aaron Donald. Having like 9 sacks, especially from the interior, that guy is just an absolute freak. Offensive Rookie of the Year, I went with Herbert, even though I think I would still, if I had to put my money on it, I'd still bet Burrow to win the whole thing. But up to this point, I still got to go Herbert. Defensive Rookie of the Year, I actually went with Patrick Queen. I just feel like he's everywhere. Anytime I watch Baltimore, he's just, I mean, 35 solo tackles, whatnot. Yes, and then sir. Coach of the Year. Yeah, no, he's good. And then Coach of the Year, I went Tomlin. I don't know. My like dark horse pick for that was Kevin Stefanski, just because he's getting quite a bit out of this Browns team that no one's ever been able to. But I would definitely go Tomlin. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, comeback player, have to go Big Ben.
Yes, sir. Love to see it. Midseason awards for the Pickup Podcast. I hope all these players put this on their mantle, cherish it.
I think they're listening,
too. More important than any award you'll ever win. Remember that. 100%. I know they're listening.
Oh, they absolutely
my
are.
My favorite moment that we had was dropping the video and it getting retweeted by Terrell Owens.
Oh, yeah.
When we first dropped the pad. That was 2018, I think. I think it was about him in the Hall of Fame. He was like, see, these niggas know what they're talking about? I was like,
yeah. Yeah, that's what that was for sure.
But so moving on, so we got the second half dark horse contenders for the NFL season. Anybody have any hot takes of who's gonna turn it around, right the ship, and make the playoffs?
I put two teams down. One of them, I don't even know if they could be considered a dark horse. The other one's more of a dark horse. I'll just get that first one out of the way. I went with a team that is still like tied for the lead in their division, but still no one's talking about them, and that's the Colts. I mean. You hear it all the time. Football's won and lost in the trenches, and they got one of the best O-lines in the league. I think they're second in run defense behind Tampa. Rivers is a veteran QB, got a solid receiving core, especially when T.Y. is healthy. So we'll see what's up with him. And I don't know, top two defense right now, and I don't mind their chances to take that division from Tennessee. For like a more of a dark horse, which it is a reach, but I mean, we're having fun with dark horse picks. I chose Miami. Tua, honestly, I think Tua looked solid in his first start. They have the lowest points per game given up, which I was really surprised. Like, I feel like I still read that stat wrong. And I mean, I feel like as well as the Bills are playing, I think that division's kind of open. They only lost by 3 to the Bills the first time they played them, and they played them again later. So, I guess we'll see what they do.
Yes, sir. Chris, you got some?
Yeah. So I have two teams as well. One, I'm going to start with my Eagles, and I think it's probably the first dark horse pick that's first in their division.
right.
Now, yeah, I think they're the favorite to win the division, but the meaning behind dark horse for me with the Eagles is going to be turning into a good football team. I know I mentioned it earlier, but they have all the pieces that they need right now. I mean, sure, Alshon may come back. They didn't ship him off yet. I'd rather see him honestly just line up as a tight end too at this point. But they have all the pieces to do well, and it's relied on Carson Wentz, who can play well. So I think with that 4-game stretch after the Giants, if they can win 3 out of the 4, now they're a good football team.
Right.
So I think that's one of them. Now, the dark horse I'm going to pick for my legitimate dark horse, like you said before me, is, you know, we're just having fun with it, is the Chargers. Now, I know they're 2-5, but 3 games now, they've been up by – it might even be 4, but I think it's 3 games they've been up by 16 points or more and lost.
Yep.
So they easily could be a 5-2 team, be second place in that division, make the playoffs, especially with the expanded playoffs. You got Herbert, who's just coming into his own, and you got Anthony Lynn, who he's not gonna throw games for a pick. That's not who he is. And you got Keenan Allen, who's not gonna let that happen either. So I think Chargers play Chargers football in 3 quarters that they can play in 4. They have a chance to take over that second spot in that division and make playoffs, because the Raiders aren't anything special and the Broncos suck. So I think, you know, the Chargers have a chance, and I think my Eagles right the ship and turn into a decent football team in the second half.
Nice. All right, so my 2, one is not particularly popular, but I'm going to say the Atlanta Falcons. And here's why. Atlanta has been 2-1 since firing Dan Quinn. Matt Ryan has gotten back on track. Julio Jones has gotten his targets back up. The defense seems to look like they learned how to close somewhat, you know, against the Panthers. They closed out with a pick and didn't give up another heartbreaker for the first time this season. And they scored 40 on the Vikings, held them to 23. I want to say that's their, like, second lowest total of holding points, 23. They did against the Panthers, 17 against the Panthers, and then 23 to the Vikings. So I feel like they have a favorable schedule coming up. The Broncos, Raiders, I don't ever trust the Raiders with Derek Carr. The Chargers, now they're going to lose at least one of the games to the Bucks and the Saints. They play them both twice. So I feel like they have, and the Chiefs, 3 more losses maybe on their record. They can finish the season at 7-9. And my other one is, yeah, I don't think they make the playoffs, but I just, you know, just a team that can just, you know, make a push.
Yeah.
And another one is a team I actually do think can make the playoffs is the 49ers. 49ers are 4-4 right now. They've had probably the worst luck in the league with injuries. The first 2 weeks of the season, they lost like 6 people for the year. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't know if he has beef with George Kittle, if he owes him money or something, but that's really all that's wrong with their offense, that not having Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk at the same time for like the whole season. I think once those two are fully healthy, and then they also lost Mostert and Tevin Coleman, but McKinnon came back. So I think once those 3 running backs get back healthy, which should be in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk are back fully healthy on the field, because those aren't, you know, like season-long deals. That offense, because the defense actually hasn't tailed off too bad, which is kind of surprising given how – they lost Bosa. They lost Richard Sherman. They lost Solomon Thomas. So for the defense to not be as bad as people thought they would be, you know, they gave up 43 to the Dolphins, and I think that's their worst outing. 37 to the Seahawks, but then they actually held the Seahawks in the fourth quarter. I think only 1 score, and they previously only punted once the whole game. So,
wait, you think they get it done with Mullins, with Garoppolo being hurt for this long?
Man, I think that Mullins looks like he has an edge to him. I don't know what it is, but like I say, he comes in the game and scores like, what, 3 touchdowns? Or he leads 3 touchdown drives and has like 260 well,
Kittle's out too, isn't he?
Yards in the air in the fourth quarter. Like, Kittle's out too, but like I'm saying, like the rest of the offense, I mean, Kittle was like a one-man show kind of with everyone else being out. So as far as just like being able to open up the offense with some other players, and plus I feel like they have they still got the Cowboys and the football team. They got the Cardinals, who I feel like they match up very well with. They lost to the Cardinals in week 1, but I feel like they match up well defensively with them.
Could be. Could be.
If anyone's going to turn it around, like, because if you got a 4-4 team in the best division in football, I think that entire division is actually going to make the playoffs with the seventh seed in the wild card this year. I feel like that's a possibility.
Yeah, I think so too. Unless, I mean, the only other one that would take it from them would be Carolina.
Nah, the Saints.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they got Saints there.
I don't think, because no one from the NFC East is gonna make the playoffs other than the division winner. No one from the NFC North. I don't think the Bears keep this up, by the way. They're probably my what's the opposite of a dark horse? The second half letdown. I think it's the Bears. So I agree. Packers are gonna run away with that division. So it's really just gonna be between the Saints, who I have my reservations with them just because of Drew Brees' age this year, and it's been showing without Mike Thomas. And who knows when he's going to come back. I don't know what's going on. Him start with the ankle, then it was him punching a teammate, then it's a hamstring. So I don't know if they're just holding him or if he really has all these issues going on. But that offense can only do so much with just Breeze and Kamara down the line. Like, they're not going to play the Panthers every week, you know?
A little slant boy don't want to play.
That's it. So, and especially with the Buccaneers actually, like, hitting their stride for real after the beginning of the season, they looked a little off. But I think most people looked off because there was no preseason or anything. It's a brand-new team. They worked out – I think they worked out most of their kinks. Tom Brady looks vintage. Gronk is actually starting to get back into the action. They got Fournette back into the running game, and Ronald Jones was, like, third in the league in rushing yards. So it's all coming together. And their defense was already nice before any of this, you know, was put together on the offensive side. And their defense is still nice. They're like number two or three in the league right now. So I'm not worried about the Bucs. If anything, it's going to be the Saints and the 49ers going for that seventh seed to me.
Cool. Like it.
You want to get into picks?
Yeah. We'll start with Zach.
Do you want me to make all of them or one by one?
Picks. With us.
I've already run through the whole list. Bet the Packers -6. I think we just talked about the 49ers and their injuries, and every time Aaron Rodgers loses, he just always plays well. So I got the Packers. I'm going to take the Chiefs over the Panthers. I would love to say otherwise, but I'm not going to. I don't even care about Atlanta, Denver. Like, anyone can win. I wouldn't even know till 3 weeks from now. But I'll probably I'll pick Denver. Atlanta will find a way to lose. They'll throw the ball into the crowd or something. Seattle Buffalo is going to be really, really fun. But I got to trust Russ, so I'll pick Seattle on that one. Ravens Colts, that's another really good one. I'm going to pick the Colts. I'm not big on Lamar Jackson, honestly. I understand that he probably is good, and he won MVP last year, but I think he's overrated, and I think teams are kind of forcing him to throw more, even though they're still having a great year, but it just seems a little more disappointing than the record shows. So I'll pick the Colts. Jags and Texans is another one where, I don't know, just give me Houston next. Minnesota, Detroit, I'll take Minnesota. I still feel like they're better than they're performing, and they just beat the Packers last week, so they showed that. Bears and Titans, we actually got a really good slate this week. I think I'm with you guys that the Bears are, like, what would you say, like, the letdown team. So I'm going to go with Tennessee, the Giants, and the football team. Wow. I'll go with Washington. Raiders, Chargers, I'll take the Raiders. Cardinals, Dolphins, I'll go with the Cards. Steelers, Dallas, I think the Steelers are going to improve to 8-0. Saints, Bucks, that'll be another fun one. I'm going to take Tampa because it's one team's got a wash quarterback and the other team's got another one. But I trust Tom Brady more. And then I'll take the Pats over the Jets. And Cam's going to have a breakout performance against New York, because who doesn't?
Let's go. I need to get that game. Chris, you got picks?
Yeah, I got picks. And, you know, I'll add a little aspect to your podcast here, and I'll give you spreads as well if anyone wants to listen. And
let's go.
Right. Let's go.
All right, so we'll start with Packers Niners. I like Packers -6 strictly because Aaron Rodgers is a
fucking baby. Yo, wait, what does that mean?
He's going to come out.
Those guys are babies. You ever seen him get mad after a loss?
He's a baby.
Yeah, just He's just a one. I think he's a whiny bitch, to be honest, too. I think everyone's heard the stories about how he's just a douche. You guys hear the story where his family sent him Christmas presents and he sent them all back still wrapped?
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, the guy. His brother was on The Bachelor or some shit like that. Yeah, he had some segment talking about. Oh,
my favorite Aaron Rodgers moment is when he was on a high on painkillers against the Bears a couple of years ago doing that interview.
Yeah.
Yo, shout out to Aaron Rodgers for always having a baddie though.
Always. But yeah, I got Packers -6. Broncos Falcons. Gonna go with Atlanta. Take Atlanta -4. I'll probably buy a point there. Seattle Bills I'm gonna take. So for the sake of win loss, I'm gonna take Seattle. I'm gonna take Buffalo +3 because who knows what the weather is gonna be like in Buffalo Sunday.
Yeah.
If it's snowing, I'm taking Buffalo.
Don't worry, the weather's getting nice here.
Take a money line.
We're pretty close to the weather for us. I'll just take.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll probably stick with Buffalo +3 then. But Seattle, just for sake of picks, money line there. Bears, Titans, Titans to win and Titans to cover. I think the Bears are terrible. I think Nick Foles, I hate Nick Foles. I hate hearing Eagles fans say we shouldn't have let go of Nick Foles, a bunch of dumbasses. So, take Titans -6 there. Ravens, Colts, I'm taking the Ravens and I'm going to take them to cover. I like the Colts. I think they're a good football team. I think Lamar has been underperforming all year. And I think at some point him and that offense have to come out. I don't think they win by too much, but I think they cover 2.5. Panthers, Chiefs, I would take Chiefs to win. I would not bet -11 though, because I think Panthers are a wild card team. -11 is too much for that type of spread there. Lions, Vikings, no spread listed right there, but whatever it is, I'm taking Vikings. And if they're not favorited for some reason, I'm taking them. I'm taking the money line. If they're favorited, I'm covering their spread. Lions, Stafford's out with COVID. Giants, Washington, whatever the over under is, we're taking the under 100%. but we'll take, I guess for the sake of picks, I'll take the Giants for some reason. Shit game. Let's see. Texans, Jags. 1-6 versus 1-6. That's a good one, huh? I'll take Texans and then Texans to cover -7. Raiders, Chargers, even spread. I'll take Chargers all day. I think they win pretty convincingly. Steelers, Cowboys. Steelers to win. -14 is a lot, but the Cowboys are that bad. And who are they starting? Have we talked about that? Have you seen these two quarterbacks that they're going between? One's like the AAF leader in pass yards, I saw. I might even say fuck it and take Steelers to cover -14. I took Chiefs to cover -19.5 against the Jets, and even that covered. So we'll take that. Let's see. Dolphins, Cardinals. I'll take Cardinals and to cover 4.5. Saints, Bucks. Bucks -5. No, I'm going to take Bucks to win for the pick, but I'm taking Saints +5 as my betting pick. And then for Monday, Patriots, Jets. Yeah, I'll take the Pats to win. I don't know if I take – yeah, I'll take -7 as well. I might buy a point and go -6, but those would be my picks and my betting picks.
I got one more for you. Cam Newton on Monday night, 2.5 over under. What you taking for touchdowns?
Under
2 touchdown, 3 touchdown.
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, is it one of those bets where it's got to be throwing, or are we throwing a rushing one?
Oh, no, I'm talking total touchdown scored, Cam Newton.
Total touchdowns 2.5. Well, I wouldn't fucking touch it in my life, but if I had to against the Jets, sure, I'll take the over. I'll take 2 passing, 1 rushing.
Nice. You heard it here first. Chris Denny told you to bet all your money and lose.
No, we've been on a tear.
Nah, you really have, man. I'll be seeing you post this shit, man. I'd be intrigued. Yeah. But I
just make one unnecessary parlay every week and then make some smart bets. I don't know why I do it. It's just fun.
Yeah, I mean, my golden ticket, you take 2 straight bets that you like for about 100, 150, whatever. Have some money to play with and go make 8 $20 parlays to win a bunch of money. You hit one of them, You made 600 that week. Move on to next week.
Listen to that, man. Get your money right, Kings.
I need to get mine right so I can start playing. But
yes, sir.
I'm gonna go through my picks. Thursday night, I'm gonna take the Packers. Just like you said, Aaron Rodgers coming off of a loss. I don't know when the last time they've lost multiple games in a row. It's been a couple of seasons at least. Chiefs over the Panthers resoundingly. I'm gonna take the Falcons over the Broncos. I'm gonna take the Seahawks over the Bills. Taking the Titans over the Bears. Taking the Colts over the Ravens. Vikings over the Lions. I'm taking the Giants over the football team. Taking the Texans over the Jaguars. Chargers over the Raiders. Steelers over the Cowboys. And that will be the most embarrassing game of the season. Hart wants to take Dolphins over the Cardinals, but Kyler's like my third in MVP, so I can't go against him right now. So I'm going to take the Cardinals over the Dolphins, but I would not take them to cover if I was betting. I think this is going to be the game because that Cardinals defense is terrible. Where Tua steps it up as a passer. I hope they open the playbook up for him a little bit and let him do that. Taking the Buccaneers over the Saints. Taking the Patriots over the Jets, and I'm going to say Cam Newton has 4 touchdowns, 2 passing, 2 rushing.
Then you should love 2.5 if that's the prop.
That's just what I proposed to you. I'm not putting any real life dollars on it.
I'll go find it and I'll do it for you.
All right.
Yeah, I got Packers over Niners, Chiefs over Panthers. I'm gonna go Broncos over Falcons. I'm gonna go Seahawks over Bills, Titans over Bears, Ravens over Colts, Lions over Vikings, Washington over Giants. Man, this is a horrible game. Texans over Jags, Chargers over Raiders, Steelers over Cowboys, Bucks over Saints, Patriots over Jets, and Cardinals over Dolphins. Yep. That's it. Last note. From your perspective, being up there, does it look like the ghetto?
I can tell you this. In these past couple days, it's like it's just mind-numbing. Like U.S. election gets more coverage than the Canadian election here. Like it's like almost like a drama series. It's tiring almost, and I couldn't even imagine what it's like for you guys actually living in the States.
That is so pathetic, and I'm glad you said that.
Hey, Zach, I appreciate you coming on, Chris. Definitely appreciate you coming back. Definitely got to do this again. Remember, y'all, beginning of the year, man, we're going to do like kind of a little reboot, lock in more, and definitely record more on a regular basis and give y'all videos like we were giving y'all when we first started. So be on the lookout for that for sure. We're going to step our game up.
Also, shout out to Reggie. Reggie just made a big life move. Out there in Seattle, turn that up. And he's also writing. So I'm going to start dropping his articles. I'm writing a little here and there with a player circle. So
I was about to say, shout that out.
Shout out to player circle, Driz and all them boys from Coastal. Putting me on with them with the writing game and stuff.
That's dope.
Appreciate it, yo.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the playground. Once again,
shout out to Zach, the playground.
Yeah, the Let's Playgrounder go. With an ER at the end. And then the Playgrounder podcast.
That's what it is? With an ER. The one ER.
Hey, that's the only one I need to say.
All right.
Turn that up. All right. Episode 72, the Pickup Podcast. We are out. Appreciate y'all.
Blah, blah, boom, blah.